make them clap to this.
To show our appreciation for your support.
Make them clap to this.
Thank you, DJs.
Make a clap to this. Make a clap to this. Make a clap to this. I never let the mic magnetize me no more, but it's fighting me, inviting me to rhyme. I can't hold it back, I'm looking for the line. Taking off my coat, clearing my throat. The rhyme will be kicking in till I hit my last note. My mind remains to find all kind of ideas. Self-esteem makes it seem like a thought took years to build, but still say a rhyme after the next one. Prepared, never scared, I'll just bless one. And you know that I'm the solo win, so Eric B, make him clap to this. Make him clap to this. Make a clap to this. Make a clap, make a clap to this. Make a clap to this. Make a clap to this. I don't bug out or chill or be acting ill. No tricks in 86, it's time to build. Eric be easy on the cut, no mistakes allowed. Cause to me, MC means move the crowd. I made it easy to dance to this. But can you detect what's coming next from the flex of the wrist? Saying D, then I proceed, cause my man made a mix. If he bleed, he won't be no band-aid to fix. The fingertips, so I'm rhyming too, there's no rhymes left. I hurry up because the cut'll make him bleed to death. But he's kicking it, plus it ain't no half-stepping. The party is live, the rhyme can't be kept inside of me. Erupting just like a volcano. It ain't the everyday style of the same old rhyme, cause I'm better than the rest of them. Every B is on the cut, and my name is Rakim.
Make a clap to this.
Make a clap to this.
Go get a girl and get soft and warm. Don't get excited, you've been invited to a quiet storm. But now it's out of hand, cause you told me you hate me. And then you asked, what have I done lately? First you said, all you want is love and affection. Let me be your angel and I'll be your protection. Take you out, buy you all kinds of things.
Make a clap to this.
Call the attitude, you need food to eat up. I'm scheming like I'm dreaming on the couch with my feet up. You scream, I'm lazy, you must be crazy. Thought I was a donut, you tried to glaze me.
Make a clap to this. 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 Make a clap to this.
Now that made it easy to dance to this. But can you detect what's coming next from the flex of the wrist? Saying D, then I proceed, cause my man made a mix. If he bleed, he won't need no band-aid to fix.
Cut, and my name is Rakim. Make a clap to this. 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 Make a clap to this.
What's good? It's your man MC Shan, and you tuned into the G Lou Show, Flashback Fridays. Y'all already know what it is. One time for your mind, two times for your soul.
Yo, man, this is G Lou Show, Flashback Fridays. We got a very, very special guest, the original gangster of hip-hop from the Bronx, New York, the legendary Just Ice is on the premises tonight, coming up next.
We all agree tonight, all of the speakers have agreed that America has a very serious problem. Not only does America have a very serious problem, but our people have a very serious problem. America's problem is
bugging. It's one or two suckers, ignorant brothers, trying to rob and steal from one another. You get caught in the mid. So to crush that stereotype, here's what we did. We got ourselves together so that you could unite and fight for what's right. Not negative cause. The way we live is positive. We don't kill our relatives.
Pop, 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 one is shot, who's to blame? Headlines, front page, and rap, the name. MC Delight here to state the bottom line. The black on black crime was way before our time.
Sugar Brothers, life with a knife. That's cause he died a trifling death when he left his very last breath. Was I slept, so watch your step. Back in the 60s, our brothers and sisters were hanged. How could you gangbang? I never ever ran from the Ku Klux Klan, and I shouldn't have to run from a black man. Cause that's
funky bread dressed to impress, ready to party. Money in your pocket, dying to move your body. To get inside, to pay the whole $10. Got tape with a razor blade, tape to your collar. Leave the guns in the crack and the knobs alone. MC lights on the microphone. Bum rushing and pushing, snatching and taxing. I crammed to understand why brothers don't be maxing. There's only one disco, they'll close one more. You ain't guarding the door. So what you got a gun for? Do you rob the rich and give to the poor? Yo, daddy-o. School them to the moon.
Just straight from the mouth. End up in jail and gotta go. Cause you could do crime and get paid today, and tomorrow you're behind bars in the worst way.
Far from your family, cause you're locked away. Now tell me,
do you really think crime pays?
Even on taking what your brother has?
You little sucker, you talking all that jazz.
It's time to stand together in a unity. Cause if not, then we're soon to be self-destroyed, unemployed. C-rap race will be lost without a trace or a clue. But what to do is stop the violence and kick the science down the road that we call eternity, where knowledge is forming. You learn to be self-sufficient, independent. To teach the East is what rap intended, but society wants to invade. So do not walk this path that they laid it.
Self-destruction.
Understand.
Self-destruction.
Self-destruction.
My name is Jeff Iceman.
there'll be no bum rushing. Let's get together because we're falling apart. I heard a brother shot another, it broke my heart. I don't understand the difficulty, people. Love your brother, treat him as an equal. They call us animals, I don't agree with them. I'll prove them wrong, but right is what you're proving them. Take heed before I leave to what I'm saying, or we'll all be on our knees praying.
The heavy deep, deep in the heart of the matter. The self-destruction is served on a platter. Making a day, not failing to anticipate. They got greedy, so they fell for the bait. That makes them a victim, picked and plucked. New jack in jail, which is the best they ever duck. There's no one around, cause in jail you're a number. They never took the time to wonder about
self-destruction.
Yes, we urge to merge. We live for the love of our people, the hope they get along. Getting a point to our brothers and sisters who don't know the time.
So we gotta ride.
Stand in your head, you know our job to build and collect ourselves with intellect. To revolve, to evolve the self-respect.
Cause we got to keep ourselves in check.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's your boy DJ Kev Ski, straight from Harlem, fifth Beatle of the Get Fresh crew. Thanks for tuning in to the G Lou Show on Flashback Fridays, hosted by G Lou. Shout out to our sponsors, BTP Media and 93 Tweed FM.
Yo, what up, everyone? Welcome to the G Lou Show, Flashback Fridays, the 26th of January, 2024. I am G Lou. I'm joined with my co-host Queen Jean. Got my brother Maniac with me. And tonight, Queen Jean, what's up, Queen? I know Queen is not
what's
feeling that great tonight. But how are
Queen
you?
Well, I'm not heading for self-destruction, though.
That's a good thing.
That's the real. Hey, King DJ Maniac. How are you, Kings, doing? I'm excited about the conversation. It's going to be a lot of history. For those
yes.
who don't know, who those who think they know, but now you gonna know.
That
mm-hmm.
part.
Because the guest is gonna let you know. So yeah, happy Flashback Fridays to everyone. It's good to be above the soil. Our pulses are still
yes.
beating. All
yes.
praise to the Most High.
Yes. 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 DJ Maniac, how you doing, brother?
I'm good. Ready to park in at 11.
Okay. Well, you're going to get some history
what?
Before you do that, though. Yeah, I mean, you're going to get some good history. You know?
Because
we got an original in here tonight. You know, we talk about this G stuff and all of that, but we got an original, not only original gangster, but original, one of the OGs of hip-hop, man, that goes way back, you know, set a lot of trends. Did a lot of things, you know what I mean? I've been tapped in since day one. I play that song right now, Self-Destruction, for the people who don't know, who you know, got familiar with the homie Just Ice on that song, because to me, he was one of the standout MCs on that song. And that was just an incredible song, an incredible time in history. And the homie had a part to, was a part of that. He also was close with KRS-One, you know what I mean? So we're going to get a lot of history tonight. So I'm really honored and blessed to bring you this show tonight. Shout out to our sponsor, Jeff Kwan, BTP Media Group, for putting it together. But tonight we have a very, very special guest, and I think he is here. Queen Jean, why don't you go ahead and introduce him for us, please?
Nice.
Okay, we got the legendary Just Ice, y'all, coming to us from the Bronx, New York. Good
Bronx.
Evening, sir. How you doing?
Can y'all hear me?
Bronx.
Can
you hear me? Yes, can you hear us?
I can hear you perfectly.
Great. How are you doing this evening?
I'm great. I'm out here in Florida taking it easy.
Okay. They
Florida,
say that, they
okay.
say the gangsters they say the gangsters retire in Florida. You know what I mean?
Nah, not like that.
He said he's just out there taking it easy.
I'm taking it easy, you know, nice, enjoying the warm weather.
That part, I'm
know,
sure, because
right?
I know it's cold in New York right now.
Yeah, I'm not trying to be there.
Yeah, I can dig that. Lord, I was thinking about that the other day with my grandson. We were talking about going to see my other grandson, and I was like, ooh, that would be pretty cool, because that's one place I have not had the pleasure of visiting. So enjoy that.
Have you ever been to Florida, Queen?
Because it's cold everywhere. I have never been to Florida. So that's on my my travel.
Okay.
But yeah, but enjoy it, because it's cold everywhere else. It's not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So welcome to the show.
Yes, we got everyone. Like I said, we got a legend in the house tonight, man. Just Ice, man. Welcome to the show, sir. Thank you, first and foremost, for joining our platform, man. Thank you so much,
no
man. It's an honor.
No problem.
Yes, sir.
Absolutely, it's an honor.
Yes, sir.
Got you here to now, tell just, the people what they think they know.
Right.
Tell them what they need to know.
Just Ice, I want to start it off because I just played Self-Destruction. I know that's moving forward a little bit, but just please, man, that was just for me, I'm much younger than you, you know what I mean? That song for me, you know, when I was growing up, was a very important song, and it meant a lot, and it still does today. Of course, what we have going on today with, like, Stop the Violence and Self-Destruction, of course, it's 10 times probably worse than it was then. But if you could tell us just the importance of that song, man, and you know what that meant at that time, you know, for you and everyone involved in it.
Well, basically, because at that time it was like a heavy crack thing going on in New York. People killing each other for this drug. I mean, a lot of shootings, a lot of stabbings. It was like at its peak at the time that we decided to make this record, because it was also brothers in the rap business fighting and killing other brothers and stuff of that nature. So we just decided, instead of just making one individual record, we all come together and make a positive record with all of us on there. That way it could reach out to everybody's audience.
Right.
And we had to deliver a message that was, how can you say, it had to reach every generation that was at that, you know, at that particular time, the young and the old. So we had to form it. We had to form it in a way that it was fun to listen to, but it was still teaching you something.
And did you know the impact that it was? I'm sure you guys wanted to have the impact, but did you all know the impact that it would have, and how did you feel about the impact that it did have?
Well, we were very happy with the outcome, because it's like the more the record stayed out there, heavier, and the more people gravitated toward it. The whole purpose of making the record was to grab, like I said, to grab both audiences of all generations. So it's like the longer the record stayed out, the more people listen to it. I mean, even now, people still listen to that record.
Man,
you know, it's,
yes.
It that record did what it was supposed to do. It brought people to the record so they can listen to the record and understand where we was coming from, and maybe they could relate that to some part of their life.
Right. And it definitely did that. Like I said, I just remember, man, when it came out, you know, it was on, we had what, Yo MTV Raps and Rap City, but you know, Yo MTV Raps was pretty big at that time. It was just on there every episode. You know what I mean? It was, and I think you guys had a special on it one time where they had everyone on there. It was just like a real big movement and a big impact, because, like I said, I definitely remember it coming up, and just the impact, and just to till today, to me, it's one of the best songs ever for that, you know, getting that message out. Just almost like how We Are the World was, you know, when that came out on the mainstream.
Yeah, yeah.
That's how that was for hip hop.
Yeah.
Wow.
Exactly.
Ice, what were some of those, what was that session like making that record happen? I mean, having everyone on there and putting that all together, how was that like?
Well, a lot of the sessions were broken up. Everybody wasn't there present at all times for everybody's lyrics. There were some people there, some people weren't there. Like with Chuck, we had to fly Chuck Livingston from, because he was, I think, in Atlanta at the time.
Okay.
It was like we pieced it together. It was like a little puzzle. They pieced it together,
so,
and they made it work.
So So it's safe to say even way back then, that's why I want to know this session, because, you know, now that's really what they do regularly. Like, people record here, record there, and files and all that. That was going on way back then, safe to say?
Yeah.
Wow.
Because everybody couldn't be there because Chuck didn't live in New York at the time.
Right.
See, so he had to do his lyrics wherever he lived at, record them, fly them in, you know, however he got them in there. And D. Nice did what he had to do with the editing and everything, and we made it work.
Wow. That's incredible, bro. Tell us, too, just one more thing on that, because, like, to me, that's a very important song and movement. How about the video? I mean, the video, again, was incredible, legendary. What was that video shoot like?
It was, like I said, it got shot in so many different parts. I mean, to be honest, I missed the morning that they were all in Mount Morris Park and everybody was sitting down at the park singing stuff. I wasn't there that morning because I was getting a haircut. So
okay.
by the time I got there, they had moved on from that part and everybody was meeting up at 135th Street and Lenox Avenue at the Schomburg.
Right.
That's where we were all sitting down in the class. It was, to be honest, it was fun. It was a lot of fun, a lot of food, you know. So, I mean, it was an experience. It was an experience.
Right.
So it was fun. Like I said, you had to make it fun in order for the people to gravitate toward it.
Right. I mean, it definitely came across, however it was made. Let me ask you this, too, one more thing on this. Was it hard? Like, I mean, of course, everyone, it was for a great movement and a great cause. But, you know, I did hear back in the day, it was a lot of maybe here and there. I don't know. Was everyone getting along? How was that for everyone to come together? Was everyone on the same accord for the most part? I know everyone wasn't there.
Well, it wasn't the artists who wasn't on. All the artists were together. Because even I had a little issue with one of the directors of the record. Her name was Ann Carley. She was from Jive Records. She was trying to say that I was too hard to be on a record and I wouldn't fit in. And then that just led to a domino effect because it was like, I think Dougie said, well, if Justice not going to be in it, I'm not going to be in it. And Heavy Deep was like, well, if they not going to be in it, I'm not going to be in it. And it just started happening like that. So she had no choice but to put me in it.
Okay. Damn.
She was like, well, I'm glad I put him in there because it brings a different element to the record. And everybody was like, yeah, whatever. Because, you know, if Justice wasn't going to be on there, we wasn't doing it.
Wow. So it's safe to say already then you were looked at as a like too hard, like, because you I mean Just Ice, we're going to get into it a little bit more, but like I said again, for the people who don't know, Just Ice was like one of the original gangsters of hip-hop, you know, safe to say it, whatever, however you want to put it, you know. So was it like they were trying to make it like you were hard to work with, too hard, or like, man, like they were scared of you in some sort?
It wasn't that I was hard to work with, just that my lyrics prior to that record, all my lyrics are just hard. I can't help it. I talk hard. I rhyme hard.
Right.
Yeah.
And she wanted this to be more like a passive record. But everybody was like, yo, we might not rhyme as hard as Just, but we don't rhyme soft. I mean, come on. Now, even everybody in there spit something that was relevant. And,
right.
And it didn't come off soft. So she really didn't have a choice because I even watered down my lyrics so it would try to fit in with everybody else's.
Right.
You know, because, I mean, usually I don't rhyme soft like that. To me, that was a soft-ass rhyme.
That was soft. He said that was soft. Damn.
That was a soft-ass rhyme. So I just had to...
What did she think?
Say what?
Did she think you guys were being too radical or something? Is that what she thought?
And
she didn't understand the power.
Ann Carley just didn't want... Because the name Just Ice brings a whole different element to it. Instead of something with, instead of MC Light or knowing Light was on there, knowing was on there, or Heavy D was on there, or the Radical, the Rebel Chuck D. You know, they was cool with them, but when it came to Just Ice, because, I mean, my reputation preceded me. All you had to do was just say my name, and motherfuckers knew what was going on.
Right.
You know, so, but yeah. That's why I said I had to, because my original lyrics for that part was much harder than that, and Chris was like, nah, Just, you got to water that down. So I said, fine, I watered it down.
Right, right. Wow. Legendary shit right there. Just Nice, everyone. For the people just coming in tonight, we have the legend here tonight. We're talking about the classic track Self-Destruction, Stop the Violence. That was, I think, 89, Ice?
Some shit like that, 88, 89, yeah.
Yeah, 88, 89. But, yeah, we got the legend here tonight. Just Ice, now, speaking on that, let me go back now a little bit for the people just who don't know, man, the story or the history, you know, of Just Ice. You know, to me, the original gangster, like you and Schoolie D to me. But take us back a little bit, man, to Just Ice. You know, what made you, like, because we're talking hip-hop, like you said, especially back in those days, it was very few that were coming across how you did. How does the story of Just Ice start for you to even start rhyming and becoming that radical MC or that MC, or however they want to call it? I don't know what they want to call it as far as you, but how does Just Ice, you know, become Just Ice and become the lyricist that he is in that fashion?
Well, I mean, really, I started rhyming. I started listening to hip-hop in 1975. I started listening to hip-hop. And the hip-hop that I used to listen to is like the original breaks, That's
right.
How I started listening. I was a DJ first. And to this day, I still got my turntables and CDJs and all that shit. I was a DJ first. I was in a crew up in Castle Hill called the Soundmasters Crew. I think I had to be like about maybe 11, 10, 11, 12, something like that. Real young. We were all young, but we all had access to records, certain records that really only the big boys would have. We had access to them. And it was like about, in that whole crew, it had to be like about 35 of us and 20 of us was DJs. I'm like, that's too much. So it was like at a party, if you didn't get there at the right time, it might be your crew, but if you're not there at the right time, you're not going to get on the turntables. So I started to think about, you know, maybe I should just touch the mic then. So I started rhyming. I think I got my first rhyme from my friend Glenn. I had to be like about maybe 11, 12 years old. I just finished doing my house chores. My grandmother just paid me my little $3, my allowance. Glenn had wrote a nice rhyme for me because I didn't know how to write that shit. My very first rhyme. I asked this motherfucker, how much you gonna charge me for the rhyme? He said, how much you got? I said I got $3. So he said $3.
Right.
And that's how it all started. I started from him because he was a good writer. Glenn had to be, if I was 11 at that time, Glenn had to be like about 13 or 14. So I started from there, and then we used to always back then have the Bambada Zulu Nation tapes. We would have Grandmaster Flash tapes. We would have Theodore tapes. We would have the Cold Crush tapes. We would have all those kind of tapes. And we would hear these guys rhyming. And out of all of these people rhyming, only one of them really stuck out to me. That was Melly Mel because of his voice. And Mel was rhyming about, even back then in the late 70s, early 80s, Mel was rhyming about reality in the streets. You know, everybody else was just making up those dip, dive, so socialized, like rhymes like that. But Mel was like hitting lyrics, and that kind of drew me into started writing. But see, the environment that I grew up in, it wasn't nice. So I didn't have nothing really nice to write about, so I just wrote about what the fuck was around me. And back then, it was like, yo, shit was grimy. I was living in Brooklyn and Fort Greene, and I was living in Castle Hill in the Bronx going back and forth. And neither one of these places was paradise. Neither one of them.
Notorious.
Yeah.
I'm not from New York, but I heard about it. Notorious. Yeah.
You know, I got a little bit of both of that. So I guess that came across in my attitude and in my rhyming, plus my voice. You know, I that's just my voice. And the way I project the rhymes, I mean, I'm my whole intention when I rhyme, I want you to feel this shit.
Right.
You know? So that's why I come across the way I do. That's the way I talk. Even my wife, she's like, sometimes I talk too hard and shit. I'm like, yo, that's just the way it come out.
That's right. I love it, man. I love it. Just Ice, y'all, is here. Briefly, I want to touch on, you spoke on Melly Mel. To me, the greatest, I mean, we talk about GOATs and all that and people, you know, want to put all these new people. But to me, Melly Mel is the foundation. You know what I mean, of this reality, what we call reality rap, what I love the most. And the message to me is just, you know, of course I was very young, but that song right there resonates till today. You know, and Melly Mel spit those lyrics, and it's just unmatched to this day. So definitely.
I used to listen to Mel way before records were even being made, before hip-hop records were even made, before Sugar Hill Gang and Rapper's Delight came out, before Super Rappin' and before Super Rappin' 2. I remember we used to go to these parties up in the Bronx, and we used to see Flash and the Furious 4. This is before Raheem got down with them. Raheem was still down with the disco, the Brothers Disco, Breakout and Baron. We used to go and listen to Flash and the Rhyme. Mel used to say some shit. I mean, the shit, New York, and the message, that's all cool, but you got to hear Mel live.
Okay. Melly Mel, the legend. Ice, tell us about, like you just said, Fort Greene, Brooklyn. I, like I said, I've heard about how notorious it is, but also the Bronx, you coming up in there where hip-hop was originated. Tell us about, like you said, hearing and doing your thing way back then, but how was growing up in the Bronx where, you know, hip-hop, the foundation, were you aware and understand what was going on at that time and the impact that would have?
Yeah, we knew exactly what was going on because up in the Bronx was the only place that had it. Uptown Manhattan, they had Hollywood and they had the Audubon and Love Bug Starsky and all of them, but they were mixing R&B with their hip hop, so it wasn't really hip hop. It was a little mixture of both. But when you came to the Bronx, we had the music up in the Bronx that no other borough was playing. We didn't play no crap. We ain't play no crap like Love Is the Message and all of that stuff. You know?
Right.
We wasn't playing those kind of records. You know, if you heard that kind of music at a hip-hop party, it was at the very beginning when it was just warming up the system.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So it was, and like I said, growing up in Brooklyn, you had total different DJs. You had DJs like DJ Coffin, the Disco Twins, the Infinity Machine, shit like that. But up in the Bronx, what else they had? That they had this kid out there called Grandmaster Flowers. I was like, boy, is that really reaching? That's reaching right there. He's reaching. You know?
Right.
Because I'm uptown, you had the Grandmaster Flash, you had the Grand Wizard Theodore, you had DJ Africa Bambaataa, you had Kool Herc, you had DJ Breakout, DJ Baron, you had Kenny Ken. You had a whole bunch, DJ Africa Islam. You had and everybody, all of these DJs were known for playing B-boy breaks, not no R&B, R&B. You had Disco King Mario, Disco King Mario used to play R&B sometimes, but when it got dark, when the sun set and it got dark, he would just play strictly hip hop.
Wow.
And this is before any hip hop record was made. Back then, the only thing that was on acetate, not even vinyl, but it was on acetate only, was Flash and the Flashes on the Beatbox. And only Flash had a copy, and only Bambaataa had a copy. Other than that, if you wanted to hear MCs rhyming, you had to come outside to the park or go to the party.
Wow. You had to be outside, like they say.
Yeah, you had to be outside. Because that record shit started in what? 79? 78? I think the first record that came out on Enjoy Records was Super Rappin' with Flash and the Furious Five. This is after Raheem got down with them. Then after that, Super Rappin' 2. Then after Super Rappin' 2, that's when Rapper's Delight came out. But I'm talking about, I'm predating all of that. I'm talking about we used to hip-hop parties. I mean, before these guys was on records, we used to see them in the park and in the club, high schools, stuff like that.
Right. Legendary shit. I got cousin Marcy coming in too. Good evening, Marcy. Ice, being that, like you said, you were moving around from Fort Greene back to the Bronx and all this. Tell us about, for the people who don't know, the different boroughs. Being that you're in the Bronx, like you said, were originally. It was different hip-hop going on. Obviously, it originated there. What was the difference at that time with all the different boroughs? Was it a big difference, like, for the people who just don't know about that? What, even for you, in Brooklyn to the Bronx?
I mean, even today, I mean, it's like back then was bad. Today it's just as bad because of the gangs. I mean, if you see, I had to go from Brooklyn to Bronx, so I was cool because I knew people in both places. But if you in Brooklyn, you don't just go to the Bronx unless you know where you're going. And if you're from the Bronx, you don't go to Brooklyn. If you from Queens, you don't go to the Bronx or Brooklyn or Manhattan because we don't like you. It was something about Queens. Bronx and Brooklyn
right.
and Manhattan didn't like Queens cats. There's some shady,
right.
shady cats.
Right.
You know? Then you had Staten Island who's trying to be like Brooklyn.
Mm.
But it's
okay.
Like, yo, it's like you could tell if you when you were in New York, because the last time I was in New York, I went to the doctor's office and I was up in the Bronx. And this lady heard me talking on the phone. And as soon as I got off the phone, she said, excuse me, you from Brooklyn, right? I'm like, yeah, I'm from Brooklyn. She's like, I can tell by the way you talk. And when you in New York, you can tell who's from who and where, who they, you know, where they from just by the way they talk.
Mm.
Is it like a different accent?
I don't know. It's not an accent. It's just the way, see, Brooklyn talk harder than any other borough out there.
Okay.
Mm. Dang, I thought that was the Bronx who did that. Okay.
The Bronx is up there. But when it comes to that hard, ruthless, just disrespectful, aggression shit, that's Brooklyn.
Wow.
Isn't that where DMX is from, too?
I can't hear that. Say that again, man.
DMX is from Brooklyn, right?
No, he's from Yonkers.
Well, what's DMX?
He is from Yonkers.
It's an original DMX before him, though, Queen.
Davey DMX. He's from
okay.
the Bronx.
Oh.
Okay, yeah.
There's Davey DMX. There's DMX / Darkman X / Divine Master Unknown, the one that just passed away. Then there's the DMX that beatboxes for me. So it's three DMX.
Okay. See,
yes.
That's what I'm saying. I'm learning history. You don't know, now you know.
Hey, but
Ice,
that's cold that you told me. You obviously always knew that out of all the boroughs, from what I've heard, that definitely the Bronx and Brooklyn were the most rugged, the hardest.
Yeah, of all five boroughs is the Bronx. I mean, of all five boroughs, this order: Brooklyn, Bronx, Manhattan, Staten Island, then Queens. Queens is at the bottom.
Okay. But let me ask you this. People always thought, just from what we used to see, say with the Bronx just looked like a whole damn near a third world country. So it was just like you figure that it was really rough there. But you're saying even Brooklyn was rougher than the Bronx. That's crazy.
Back in those days, it was a lot of abandoned buildings. Well, back in the day, they used to call burnt down Bronx, burnt up Brooklyn, because it was always abandoned houses, always fires. I mean, it was always a fire or a whole block of abandoned buildings, empty lots. That was Bronx and Brooklyn back in the days. I mean,
right.
It's not like that no more because everything's been changed. Everything is like, you know, nice now.
Right.
I took a walk through Fort Greene. Maybe a little longer than a year ago. I'm like, yo, this ain't the place I grew up in.
Wow.
They got all these nice buildings on the avenue, all clean and shit. I don't see
right.
nobody hanging. That block used to have nothing but people hanging out on it. You don't see nothing. It's like a whole different thing. So, you know, it's a good thing that they cleaned it up, but that's not the place where I grew up.
Right. Right. So is it safe to say it is cleaned up now, but is it still that Fort Greene? You know what I mean? Is it still grimy, but it's still...
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's still grimy. Yo, it's still grimy under the covers there, yeah.
Right, right. Okay. Wow. And let me ask you this, too, because, you know, back in the Bronx, too, I hear about stories how... Because, like, we have gangs and all this now. And of course, you know, I grew up in California with gangs and all that, but... I've heard stories where even like in the Bronx, there was gangs like way back then that maybe changed later and all that. But it was a lot of gang. Tell us about the gang culture in the Bronx at that time.
Yeah, up in the Bronx, man, you had some shit up there, man. Bronx or Brooklyn, the Bronx, you had the Chingalings, the Savage Nomads, you had the Zulu Nation, you had the Nine Crew. You had the Casanova crew. Oh, man. It was every part. That's what I was trying to tell you. Even if you from the Bronx, you got to be careful where the fuck you go. Even if you from Brooklyn, you got to be careful where you go. It just because you live in the borough with the name, that don't mean they like you.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
You could be, you, if you a Zulu or you a Gestapo and you traveling to Casanova territory and you don't know nobody there, you're going to get the shit beat out of you.
Mm. Wow.
You might just get shot. But you ain't got no
business
around you. And out here, and back then, it wasn't about wearing blue and red. They ain't give a fuck what color you wear. And we recognize you.
Right.
And you don't belong here. You either get the hell out of here or you get your ass kicked on the way out of here.
Mm.
That's how it was. That's how it still is. I'm not going to say was. That's how it still is. Because motherfuckers up in the Bronx clapping niggas every day. Motherfuckers in Brooklyn getting clapped every day from people in their area, you know, on account of this gang shit. But like I said,
in
New York, it didn't matter what you wore, blue, red, orange, polka dot, don't fucking matter.
Let me ask you this. Right. Let me ask you this briefly. I'm just because I'm on this gang shit. How does it feel for you to come back from those days, the original gangs in Bronx and Brooklyn and Zulu and all that? That's crazy because, you know, I heard about all that as well. But to have now, fast forward 2020, whatever we were in, and you have gangs over there now, but like Crips and Bloods, where, I know that was frowned upon in New York. And just how do you feel about that in this present day time?
I think, and I keep this the way I always say it, man. I think killing each other is stupid. It's a very, very stupid. I don't want a guys and under gang, crew, clique, my neighborhood, this my block, that's my... Yo, you killing each other, you're stupid, straight up and down.
Right.
You out there selling,
right,
selling drugs in competition with each other, and then you want to bring out the guns and the bullets start flying. You're stupid. Straight up stupid. You know what I'm saying? I don't know why this kind of culture is glorified by some people. They actually try to justify it, and the more they justify it, the more I start cracking the fuck up, because the more they justify it, the more stupid they sound.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I look at it like this here. I came up through all of that shit. I know a little bit of everything. I knew people in Brooklyn. I knew the Fort Greene Chaplains. I knew the Jolly Stompers. I knew a little bit of everybody everywhere I went in Brooklyn. So I was like one of them safe brothers. I could go anywhere. I could go anywhere in Brooklyn or walk in the Bronx. I don't have a problem. And this is before that Just Like shit.
Right.
See, I had respect before that MC shit. So that's why people, they be like, yo, Judge, you get the guy. I'm like, nah. This I had before the music.
Right.
You know? And I look at it, I just think it's stupid because all they doing is killing each other.
And now it is really how the youngsters are doing it now. You know, it's really not even worth anything. It's just like almost a fad and a fashion show. It's like no really meaning behind it. You know what I mean? It's nothing because it's really stupid now. I agree.
Very senseless.
There you go, Queen.
Yeah.
Senseless, because there's really no purpose for it. Back in the day, it was different.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Where people really, you know, but now it's really no purpose. People are just followers and just doing it to do it, and there's really no meaning behind it, and it's senseless. I agree.
No.
Yeah. Wow. I got a lot to touch on, but let me bring in, we have Queen here, we have DJ Maniac, and we also have my other co-host, Cousin Marcy, who just stepped in. So I want to introduce everyone and let anyone who wants to ask Just Like any questions or you know, get familiar, you can go ahead now.
Hey, Queen, Cousin Marcy.
Hello.
Greetings. Mic check 1, 2, 1, 2. Hi, y'all. Can you hear me good?
Yes, I can hear you very good.
Yes.
Okay, perfect. I'm not going to keep you long. Hi, Just Ice. Love your work. What I wanted to ask you was, when you just mentioned something really that caught my ear, because I was a big, huge fan of these guys, but the luck that the Zulu Nation did have at that time, was it like that, where people almost, not fearful, but did they really look up to Zulu Nation like that? And Bambada. And also, when you were coming up and doing your things with KRS and Boogie Down, who was your favorite female MC, if you all hadn't talked about it yet? And then I'm going to go back on mute.
Well, excuse me. The first question you had asked, because you asked two questions. What was the first question? I forgot just that fact.
the impact of the Zulu Nation around that time,
okay,
when, you know, things started changing. You know, what were they really that force to be reckoned with?
Yeah,
and the main leader. I'm not going to call
something.
Them a gang, but yeah.
Nah, but see, back in the see, the Zulu Nation is a break off of the Black Spades. You got to know who the Black Spades are in order to know who the Zulu Nation is. See? The Zulu Nation was more or less of a crew formed by Bambada for music, not for gang. The gang part is the Black Spades. That's the gang.
Mm-hmm.
Zulu Nation is the music crew. So whenever you heard of Bambada and the Zulu Nation, you knew music was coming. If you heard the Black Spades, you knew to get the hell out of there.
Wow.
That's the difference. Now, and the second part of the question is for my favorite female MC. Well, when I was growing up, the first female MC that I ever heard was Lisa Lee. She was the Zulu Nation. She was one of the first queens of the Zulu Nation, like back in 77, 78, something like that. This is before Bambada had the Cosmic Force or the Soul Sonic Force. There was no Cosmic or Soul Sonic Force. It was just DJ Africa Bambada, DJ Zambu. There was no Red Alert. There was no Jazzy J. It was Lisa Lee on the mic and maybe Chubby Chubb. You know, it was back then. And
nice.
When you heard the Zulu Nation, you knew it was some good music coming and loud and bassy.
Mm-hmm.
You know what, Zulu Nation, and like you speaking on it now, they had like different cliques, and Zulu Nation, Soul Sonic Force, and Bambada. It reminded me almost like a Parliament Funkadelic, where you had a whole just tribe of shit and different things. I don't know if they were influenced by them or it was before them or
not.
Hell, can you speak on that?
Bambada loved George Clinton. I mean,
okay.
You couldn't come to a Zulu Nation party and didn't hear no Parliament or no George. You would hear Parliament and you would hear Funkadelic. Because back then, that's another story, but those days, everybody thinking Parliament Funkadelic was the same thing. At one time, it was two different groups of the same band.
Okay, yeah.
But that's something different. Bam loved George Clinton. He loved him.
Okay. That's what that reminds me of, how he did his thing and how he had the whole, you know what I mean? Because, like you said, Zulu Nation Bomb, but it was Soul Sonic. It was a lot of different forces. We didn't know. I didn't know at times who was who, or was it all a collective or what?
It was only two MC groups. It was the Cosmic Force. That was Chubby Chubb, Lisa Lee, and Ike C. Little Ike C.
Okay.
And then you had the Soul Sonic Force, which was Biggs, Pow Wow, and Globe.
Okay.
Those are the only two groups we had. But everybody, then you had a break off of the Zulu called the Gestapos. That's a whole different thing.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even know about that one. Let me ask you this, though, Ice, because you just spoke on, too, talking about the coming from the Bronx and how the Bronx had a different – you wasn't doing the stuff other people were doing, the disco and all that. How was it for Bambada and them to come with the sound they had? Because that was definitely totally different from – what you just mentioned. Bambada and them came with a whole different sound, which was incredible, again, to this day. Planet Rock changed the game to all genres and people like that. You know what I mean? You know that sound. It carries on to today, the bass music. How was that?
It wasn't Bam who started. It was Disco King Mario on the east side of the Bronx, and it was Kool Herc on the west side of the Bronx.
Okay.
Bambada and Mario used to be down, like I said, with the Black Spades. They was part of the Black Spades back then. Mario had his own sound system. It was called the Disco King Mario. He would either run with the Chuck City crew, the Mayberry crew, or the Big Mac crew. That was over there in Bronxdale. That was over there by 123. That's where 123, I even put 123 in my video, me and Red Alert standing in front of it and going way back. 123 is like a mecca of hip-hop back in the days, that junior high school. Because every Friday night, you would go there. It would be Bambada there. It would be Breakout there. It might be Mario there. Sometimes, I know Flash would not come there. Flash wouldn't come there, and Herc
wouldn't come there.
Flash and Herc wouldn't come there because they were on the other side of the Bronx. And they knew if they came over there to that side of the Bronx, they would get robbed.
Right.
They would get robbed. It was certain. It's like I said, just because we all live in the Bronx together, that don't mean we like each other.
Right, right.
It's like the cast is, I remember one time Herc was having a party on University Avenue up in the Bronx at the Galaxy 2000, and then the Casanovas, that's Flash's security. That's Grandmaster Flash's. The Casanova crew came over there and stuck the whole fucking place up.
Wow.
That shit made the newspaper the next day.
Wow.
So you had to be very careful where you went back in those days. Just because hip-hop was playing, sometimes it was a trap. Sometimes motherfuckers would throw a real big party and get everybody in there in the winter. Everybody have on their sheepskins and their gold chains and everything. 20 niggas coming there with double barrels, sawed-off shotguns, stick the whole fucking place up.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
I was hearing that, and I know this is way before, but I was going to get to this later and ask you, but I heard about those kind of stories going on in the parts like the legendary Latin Quarters. You know, I'm sure that was probably later.
Nah, that's bullshit.
Okay.
I used to hang out in the Quarters.
Okay.
Nothing like that. Never. All of this shit, everything I'm talking about is like the late 70s, early 80s. All the Latin Quarters came out in 87.
Oh, okay.
86,
okay.
87.
That's way later.
Everything I'm talking about hip-hop clubs like the Black Door or what's that shit called? The Blue Something on the corner of Claremont. I'm talking about hip-hop. I'm talking about clubs that was hip-hop clubs or like the Audubon Ballroom. I mean, when that shit got robbed.
Is that where – hold on. The Audubon, is that No. I heard something where Malcolm X was. That was a
–
got killed. Was that?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the same exact place.
Wow. So, because you know, we hear about.
Huh?
Go ahead, sir.
It's a lot of shit about hip hop that a lot of people don't know, and the people that don't know are the people, and I hate to say it, are the ones that's more or less in control of this shit right now.
Right.
Because the real people that know about this shit, they be like, "Yo, you say something wrong now, man, about the wrong person. You still might get shot."
Right. Wow. Hey, man, the Bronx, to me, I mean, because you're speaking on shit way that I didn't even know and way before the stuff I heard about and a lot of us heard about, because, like, I'm speaking on the Latin Quarters, and I heard about clubs like the Fever, you know what I mean, where a lot of stuff was started, and you're going way back before that.
Yeah, man, I'm talking about before the Fever, man. I'm talking about before the Fever. I mean, I remember when the Fever – nah, man, just that – the Fever started flourishing once all of the high schools stopped having the parties in them because of the stick-ups and the gunshots. Once all the little clubs and local bars stopped having the hip-hop clubs, because if it was a little small bar, motherfuckers would come in and just rob the whole fucking bar. And the owner got tired of that shit. So the Fever, which was on McCombs Road up in the Bronx, was owned by Super Sal and Junebug. You know, Junebug.
Sal, that's the guy that was in Crush Groove, right? For the people who don't know, Sal.
Super Sal. See, Sal was cool with a lot of crews back then. He was cool with a lot of crews back then. I'm not going to get into why, but he was cool with a lot of crews. So the Disco Fever was more like a safe haven.
Okay.
You come to the Fever, you check your guns at the door, all that shit. You don't come in there and you don't bring, because it was like the only place where you could really have hip-hop with grown folks and have a drink and, you know, meet people and mingle and socialize. Don't have to worry about nobody coming in there sticking the place up.
Right.
You know, so that's why Sal, and to this day, Sal still got that kind of rep, because right now Sal is doing promotion.
Okay.
But
so he's still around.
Because, huh?
So Sal is still around.
Oh, hell yeah. Sal just threw something the other month.
Okay. Wow. Shout out to Sal, man. History tonight, people. History. Wow. So for you, I know we're speaking on the history of the Bronx and a lot of stuff. We're getting a lot of history tonight. But I guess we'll move forward for you. Like you spoke on earlier, you starting rapping and doing your thing. How did you officially get into the game? Like to maybe, I don't know, when was it that you recorded and or got your deal? Or how did you officially get into the game officially?
Well, it happened one night. I was at a place called Danceteria up in Manhattan. There was a club called Danceteria. And Danceteria had like about 12 floors and a roof, and every floor is a different DJ. But on the roof that night, DJ Africa Islam was DJing. And me and Islam, we go back because he used to DJ for a crew with us up in the Bronx. We were coming out of Monroe Projects, but DJ Kenny Ken. And this is back when, remember that record by the Jazzy Five, Jazzy Sensation?
Jazzy Sensation, yes, sir.
Yeah, this is back then when Islam had just got finished Islam was DJing for them at that time, but Jazzy J was actually on a record with them. So when we had to have parties, Islam would come and DJ for us. He would come and DJ for us. And one night, he was DJing on the roof of Danceteria, and he was like, just grab the mic. And it was kind of crowded up there. And I didn't know, but standing right next to, like in between me and Islam, we thought it was this little skinny white boy. Come to find out, it was Mantronic.
Wow. Mantronic. Wow.
Yeah. And I started rhyming. We got the party jumped and everything. As I was leaving, he pulled me to the side. And this is when his record was banging. And it was number one. It was called Fresh Is the Word.
Yes.
And he was like, yo, you sound good. You want to make a record? Blah, 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 blah. And I'm thinking, yo, another motherfucker trying to blow smoke up my ass. All right, cool. So I took the card and everything. At this time, I was a messenger. I don't know about if you know, but back in the days, we had messenger services in Manhattan. You grab packages, you take it from one place to another. All right?
Okay.
So what I did was one weekend, I had $22 fucking. And I went to the studio for 1 hour. Me and DMX, we went in there. We didn't even, this is before LaToya was even thought about. We went in there and we did the music for Put That Record Back On, and then I was rhyming over it. Sounded awful. Shit sounded awful. But I took it to them over there in sleeping bag anyway. And he was like, yo, he could tell I didn't know what I was doing with the music. He was like, you know what, I'm going to bring you into the studio, but you say the same rhymes. That's how Put The Record Back On came into that was my very first record. That was the very first record. That's how it started, by me being a Danceteria that night, going to listen to Curtis Studio, Sleeping Bag Records. The same day they told me they was going to give me a contract, I was in the middle of work. It was like snowing, blister, slush on the ground, my shoes all messed up. It was like, yeah, we're going to sign you and give you an advance. Man, I had like about 8 packages. This shit went right in the garbage.
Wow.
They went right in the garbage, and I went right to the record company.
Wow. Shout out to Sleeping Bag Records. I know a lot of people who heard that may not know, but, you're talking about, I don't want to call it legendary or whatever, but I know back in the day, Sleeping Bag Records housed a lot of, legendary groups. I know EPMD was there, but I'm sure that was way later. But even who was on Sleeping Bag?
Sleeping Bag Fresh Records. It was two labels.
Who was that other group who had the sound? What was that song? They were on Sleeping Bag. But I know it was a lot
was
of
it Hanson and Davis.
No. Who was that? I forgot their name. But, again, Sleeping Bag, I had a lot of legendary shit. So Sleeping Bag was around way back then.
Yeah, Sleeping Bag was around. It was around.
Wow. Let me ask you this. Let me go back briefly before we move on about Bambaataa and them. Like I said, again, the sound that they had Was that something originally that you guys respected or liked? Because I hear a lot of other people say they didn't originally like Planet Rock and all that whole sound. Was that something you guys originally liked?
Bam was a fucking space nut. He liked that kind of crazy shit. It's funny because Bam would have a party, right? This is Bam Bada. Bam just loved music. Bam would have a party. You know, the party would end 3-4 in the morning. But, you know, certain people would just hang out, you know, and, you know, they would be taking their equipment down. First thing Bam Bada was doing was grabbing he always carried a radio with him and always a tape. As soon as he finished DJing, the party was over because he don't touch shit. The party's over, he takes his headphones and he walks away. Everybody, he got his own people to break down the equipment. He takes the radio and plays music nobody fucking ever heard before. Only he heard it. Bam was always like that. With new crazy music and new sounds, that was Bam. That's what he was known for. He was called Bam Bada was called the master of beats. Herc was called the master of records.
Okay.
It was a totally different. Back then, Herc, even though he brought it out on the West Side, Herc was more or less for the older people.
Right.
Herc didn't throw parties for the young cats. Unless the only time he'd be for the young cats is if he was playing in the carriage room in the bottom of his building. If he was playing out in the club, Herc always played for the older cats. Just like back in the days, Grandmaster Flash basically played for older people.
Mm-hmm.
If you wanted to hear hip hop when you was young, the reason why Bam was loved so much because Bam was playing the same exact hip hop that Herc was playing. Only thing is, Bam would put on a flyer $3 with the flyer, $5 without. Where Herc is just $10 straight the fuck up, period.
Right.
So everybody was going to Bam.
Hmm.
Everybody was going to Bam. That's why he was known as the Master of Beats. I mean, I used to follow, I was like about 8-9 years old following the Zulu Nation.
Right. Wow. Did you guys know, whether you liked it or not, did you guys know the impact that would have, or were you surprised when stuff like Planet Rock and that whole sound took off how it did?
Well, we wasn't surprised because we knew as soon as we used to have Planet Rock before the rest of the world did.
Okay, right.
We knew what Planet Rock was. Once we heard it on the radio, we was like, wow, he made it.
Right.
Now, the record that surprised us was Play That Beat by Globe.
Right.
That came out of nowhere because it was like they kept that a secret even from us up in the Bronx. They kept it a secret because when that shit came out on the radio, because Globe was like one of the hottest MCs back up in there because he was different.
Okay.
He rhymed totally different. So when Play That Beat came out, that shit just took off and... I mean,
that was,
I remember when I was in like the fourth or fifth grade or whatever, and listening to WBLS in the morning, they would play that shit. I'm like, wow, that record. That when you play hip hop in the morning, because you don't realize it then, but as you get older and you know the radio how it works, when you play hip hop in the morning, you got a hot ass record.
Yeah, and to say like being that you heard that and you were in New York and the Bronx hearing that. That Play That Beat was safe to say, like, took off. That was like almost like the trademark flight for B-boying and breaking at that time. Play That Beat was like that shit that came on, and it was just like instant. Like that was like the trademark. You know what I mean?
That was one of the first commercial B-boy records.
Yes. That was like official. That was like when that shit comes on in the party, it was like everyone is doing their thing up. You know, that's when all the cardboard, whatever came out, and everyone was doing their thing. Like that was that song right there. I definitely remember that. You know, the impact.
You can say that for some. See, but you know,
I mean, you from there, you so it's different. But I'm saying just
yeah. When we heard
else.
This shit, we was like when we heard, we was like, oh, they go Globe again. So what?
Right,
I mean,
right.
Right now, me and Globe see each other on the street. We be like, "Yo, what's good?" Everything, and he go his way, I go my way. That's how it is. When you live in the Bronx, you just know everybody knows each other.
Right.
Everybody knows each other. I mean, there's certain key people that know other key people. Like I said, you gotta know where you're going in the Bronx. If you don't know where you're going, you ain't coming back.
Mm. Wow. Tell us about your relationship with the homie KRS-One. How did that come apart about? And how does that and speak on, if you can, the homie Scott LaRock, because a lot of people didn't, you know, we just heard his name, but by the time, you know, it took off, a lot of people didn't get to experience him or know anything about him. So how does your relationship with KRS-One go back in the whole BDP?
Be brief, because me and Chris, we met at a club called Broadway International Disco, and we were both homeless, and the DJ was Scott LaRock. Him, it was KRS-One, Jerry Lee MC, and some female. Those were the house MCs. But at that time, Chris was living in a shelter, and I didn't have a place to live, and he was like, I just, you know, he took me to the shelter. We stayed there for a while. Then we went our separate ways. We got a little bit of money. Next thing you know, BDP made their first record way back in the days, and they didn't use the name BDP, though. They used the name 1241.
Okay.
And they made a record called Success is the Word, and they did it on Fresh Label, Sleeping Back Fresh.
Okay.
No, hardly nobody knows that. Nobody knew who 1241 was. That was KRS-One and Scott LaRock. All right. Then after they did that, they went on to B-Boy Records, and they did a deal there, and I don't know what happened exactly there. Then after that, they went to Jive Records, and things took off, and then the dreadful day came. We were all up at Sleeping Bag Records, where I just signed a contract for my second album, and KRS-One, no, and Scott LaRock just signed a contract to produce the album, him and KRS-One. We left the record company. The record company was on 66th Street and Broadway. We all left
okay.
there. It was me, KRS-One, Scott LaRock, Scotty. It was McBoo. McBoo was with us, and Miss Melody. We all walked up to
Miss Melody.
I think we all walked up to 67th or 68th Street to McDonald's. Mr. McDonald's, right? We get inside McDonald's, and Big Daryl was with us, and he got a phone call from D-Nice. And D-Nice was
okay.
in some kind of shit.
Okay, shout out to D-Nice.
D-Nice was in some kind of bullshit uptown, fucking some kid's girl, and the nigga found out about it. They was ready to do something to Derek. So Daryl, Big Daryl, RoboCop, that's what they call the RoboCop. I just call him by his real name, Daryl. Daryl and Scott LaRock jumped in Daryl's red ragtop Jeep. It was a ragtop. They went up
right.
there, blah, blah, blah. They went up there and did whatever. That night, me and Chris were supposed to meet up in Power Play Studio to start the album. But instead, I get a phone call, and Chris is like, yo, Just, I got some shit to tell you. I'm like, what? He's like, Scott is gone. I'm like, what the fuck you mean he's gone? He's like, yo, something happened. Scotty's dead. He said, Scotty. I said, Scotty. He's like, no, Scott. Because it was Scott LaRock and Manager Mo, but his real name was Scotty. He was like, no, Scott LaRock. So then we all meet up and everything. And come to find out, man, somebody shot a bullet from the window or from the roof. And it went through the rag top, went right into the back of Scott's head. And he was, already in the Jeep with Daryl. And Daryl said he looked around, he turned and saw Scott, and Scott didn't look right, and Scott said something and just slumped over and died.
Wow.
So, yeah, I'm like, yeah, you know. So after that, man, you know, everybody just paused from everybody, you know. Everybody gave everybody space.
Right, right.
You know? And then, you know, a few years later, Chris came back. And he started doing his thing, you know. I mean, you got to go on, because if Scott was here, Scott would be like, yo, don't stop. Keep going.
Right, right, right. Scott was
the first one to be.
And, you know, even for people outside, you know, like people like me and other people that just fans of hip-hop and all of that in those early days, it was safe to say that was the first time we heard, you know, when we got a reality check on shit like that, and you know, like we lost someone in hip hop, like from the streets and shit like that, you know what I mean? That was kind of the first time we heard that, like that was early, you know what I mean? To get a reality of that at that time. So that was like, I mean, that shook everyone. Yeah, and that was big at that time to hear that type of shit. You feel me?
Yeah, I hear it.
Yeah.
I heard.
Yeah, that was very tragic as someone that was really into BDP at the time, and I thought they were real brothers.
No, they're not related.
Yeah, they just were growing kind of together in the they both were homeless, right?
Yeah, it was me and KRS-One. We were the homeless ones, but Scott was our social worker.
Wow. Scott,
oh,
that was
okay.
A social worker.
Wow.
That is a funny story. Condolences
still. Mm-mm-mm.
How soon after that did self-destruction follow?
I didn't hear what she said. What did she say?
How soon after that did self-destruction follow?
Oh, way later, I think.
What do you mean? How long was that after self-destruction? Well, that was one of the reasons.
Right.
That
self-destruction came out, too.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was one of the reasons. That's what he meant, brothers. That's what Dougie said, brothers killing brothers. That was one of the reasons why, because the guy who shot Scott LaRock, it might have been an accident, might have been on purpose or whatever, but he was another brother. And one night, he had the nerve to come to the Latin Quarters on a Friday night, a night that Red Alert plays there, and is packed. It didn't end up good for him there.
Wow. Wow. So everyone knew who he was.
Yeah, everybody knew who he was, man. I'm, I tell you, man, that kind of shit don't stay quiet. New York is
right.
New York is big, but when you know certain people, New York is small.
Wow. Yeah, I can imagine, like everywhere. History, yes, Queen. That wow. Rest in peace to Scott LaRock, man. Like I said again, I was just at that time. That was the first time we heard that type of shit in hip hop. I mean, everyone comes from the streets and whether you know, wherever they resided and that was going on, but as far as hip hop, I think that was one of the first times people heard that in hip hop. You know what I mean? It touched home to everyone, no matter where you were. If you were a fan of hip hop, you know what I mean? You were touched by that because that you know, you didn't hear of that stuff in hip hop at that time.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on where you were at, but I understand what you're saying because to us, that
you know what I mean?
From a broad
stance, you know what I mean? Because it was definitely going on, but in hip hop, because hip hop was made at that time, new and coming on, you didn't hear that because it didn't go that far to where, oh, you hear people get murdered.
I'm going to tell you the reason why it stuck out. It's plain and simple, because if you're from New York, motherfuckers get shot and killed every day. They ain't no big deal. The reason why it stood out is because it wasn't supposed to happen to him. Because he was not on that gang shit. He was not a loud, rambunctious person. He was a calm, mellow kind of guy. All he wanted to do was raise his kids and play music. That's the reason why it stuck out. If it would have been the regular motherfucker out there acting stupid, it would be like, yo, that's so what? Somebody got shot. Big fucking deal. He deserved
it.
Scott didn't deserve that. He didn't deserve it.
Mm. Wow. Wow.
Rest in peace again to Scott LaRock. Man, we got a lot to cover. Marcy, Queen, I want to let you get in here if you got anything you want to ask Just Ice.
Just Ice, Cousin Marcy here. I was going to go back a little bit. Could you tell me your most prominent memory of the blackout in 77?
Oh,
What were you doing?
Well, to be honest, that's kind of funny you asked that because I was actually thinking about that the other day. I was just in the car driving thinking about I remember that day so perfectly. I had to be 12, 11. I was 11, and we were in Castle Hill Park. It was crowded. It was about, I don't know, I don't remember the time. It was 4 or 7 because it was the summertime. It was definitely the summertime. So the sun had just went down. The sun had just went down, so I think it was closely to 8:30, something like that. And the park was crowded. Everybody playing basketball on the swings, you know, having fun. So this dude, right, he took the basketball and he started running and he went to go dunk the ball. And as soon
soon as he dunked the ball, all the fucking lights went out. It
oh, wow.
Pitch black. I was like, oh, shit, look what he did. I'm like, I'm 11 years old. I'm thinking this shit is connected. My cousin, he's 13. He was hanging out with his friend, and he was like, yo, I got to find my little cousin. I got to find my cousin. And they out there looking for me, and I'm out there hiding from them because I know if they find me, they're going to make me go upstairs. So I'm watching them look for me, and I'm staying away from them. But eventually he caught up to me and shit, and he took me upstairs. But I remember that night perfectly, man. I mean, the check cashing place back then, they didn't have gates in front of that, in front of it. It was just they locked the door and go home. After that shit, it was always gates because they broke in there. They took the safe out. I don't know. I don't know if they thought this shit through, but how the fuck are you going to open it?
Right.
They took the safe out of there.
We were talking about that the other night, ATM shit.
Yo, it was no ATMs back then, though. It was a safe. They took the safe out of the whole fucking safe. They took the whole safe out. I remember that night because in the next morning, it was still no power, but the streets looked like a million bulls. That car windows was broke. Windows in the store was broke. The owners was coming to the store seeing they shit, but it was something. I remember that blackout very well.
Wow, thanks so much.
That's history right there. Hey, so going back to you, Ice, when you do get your deal, your sleeping bag, and how does everything transpire from there? Like, how does it change? Does anything change for you? How does it go about when you get your deal and you start, getting in this game officially?
Well, I mean, it was a transition, yeah, because it's different than rhyming with a crew in the street than going to the studio. It was a small transition, but I adjusted to it very well because it was easy. I mean, this is what I wanted to do. I have love for the music. I never started rhyming to get paid. Never did that. We used to rhyme to battle other crews in different parts of the Bronx. But when I found out I could get paid for this shit, I'm like, hey, why not? I mean,
right.
I had the voice for it. I had the skill for it. So that's why I did it. I mean, and to this day, I was on the phone with Chubb Rock earlier today. And he was this is the first time me and Chubb talked in about 7 years, and we talked for a minute. He was like, yo, Just, are you still doing it? I'm like, yeah, man, I did a show 3 weeks ago. I was up in New Jersey for the 50th anniversary of hip-hop. And, you know, he was like, I didn't know you were still doing shows. I mean, I do this shit because I love the music. I love my hip-hop. You know?
Right.
It's like saying I love black people, but I just can't stand niggas. You know what I mean?
Right. Shout out to Chubb Rock, man. I've been in Atlanta for a minute, and he was over here on the radio. He had his own hip hop show here and was doing his thing pretty big.
That's where
he's
at.
Yeah. Shout out to Chubb. Yep. Shout out to Chubb. Let me ask you this, Ice. Were you aware at this time? I'm speaking on the early days, even when you got in the game, because you were early. Were you guys aware, being in the Bronx, of course, New York, all the boroughs, it was popping. But were you guys aware of the impact this hip hop shit was having on the rest of the country and the world at that time?
Well, we knew as young people, young in hip hop, that it was going to grow. But you have to understand, when hip-hop first came out, like I said, it was strictly uptown Manhattan and in the Bronx. And back then, like in 76, 77, 75, the older people, even in the Bronx, did not like hip-hop. They didn't like it. They called it that boobity-bap music. They said, yo, this is that boobity-bap shit. I'm like, well, you know, we don't – that R&B shit and disco
boobity-bap.
That R&B, that, you know, we didn't like R&B. We definitely didn't like too much disco. But even though certain disco records had breaks in them,
right?
Had breaks in them, you know. That's, you know. But the older people, man, they didn't, man. My cousin was like 2 years older than me, and he used to talk bad about hip hop. He's like it's all about Earth, Wind and Fire, Heat Wave, and Slave and T.S. Monk and all of that. I'm like,
right,
man. I said, every time Bam Bada to play, your ass is dead on.
Right.
Every time Bam Bam played, whether he played in Castle Hill, Bronxdale, Bronx River, his ass was there. I'm like, so
right.
That hip-hop music got to mean something to you.
Right, right.
Hey, Ice, let me ask you this, though, because I'm in this boat, like with you. I heard you speaking earlier how you don't like all the soft shit, the disco, all that. Tell me why. Obviously, that had a play in this, like you said, because people weren't respecting hip-hop. Even people that were doing hip-hop wanted to come in and appeal, obviously, to the older people or to the masses. So what was up with the way they were presenting the hip-hop when it did come out to the world, like the dress and all that? They were looking like the R&B bands. What was that about?
Nah. Back in the days, man, you knew if you was a B-boy. You knew a B-boy when you seen a B-boy. I mean,
right.
And this is before the big shoelaces and everything. This is back in the days when motherfuckers was wearing mock necks and double pleat split pants. This is back then. I mean, if hip-hop was being played, okay, if you go to a party, right, and this is back in the
right.
Bronx, in a club, and they playing disco, Donna Summers and George Benson and all of this bullshit, right? And,
right.
All, and everybody's dancing. Cheryl Lynn, they dancing to Got to Be Real and all of that shit. And then all of a sudden you put on some shit like the Mexican or Apache, they get
right.
a fucking attitude because they don't know how to dance to it.
Mm.
They don't know how to dance. It's not a disco beat. It's not a R&B beat. It's a hip-hop beat. It's more like of a rock hip-hop beat. That's what I was saying. I love the old hip-hop over any of this hip-hop today because, first of all, this, to me, they call hip-hop today, but to me, this ain't hip-hop.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with that. I definitely agree.
Hip-hop.
I think they need to categorize it differently because I agree with that
hip-hop,
for sure.
Hip-hop is the music that makes you want to rhyme. When you're rhyming
right.
already over music, that's not hip-hop. That's rap.
Right.
And a rapper and an MC is totally different. You will never catch me, MC Just Ice, rapping. Never.
Right. Right.
You will never catch no real MC rapping.
Right.
You know? Mm. And you could thank Curtis Blow for that bullshit.
Shout out to Curtis Blow. Shout out to Curtis Blow. Hey, let me tell you this, though, because I always was one. I'm younger, but, and you know, of course, when hip-hop was being brought up to the world, we heard Curtis Blow, and he was one of the front people they put out there. And I was a kid, but I'm going to keep it real, and no disrespect to Curtis Blow at all, you know, because he did legendary shit. But I always thought that was some, like, poppity pop shit, even when I was a kid and didn't know no better.
Let me tell you,
no disrespect to Curtis Blow.
Wait, what
the
was Curtis
Sugar Hill Effect?
I think Curtis Blow came out with Christmas rapping, right?
Yeah.
That's how he broke in with Christmas rapping.
Right.
That was the stupidest fucking record. Yo, that was a stupid record.
I don't want to, like I say, I don't want to come in here and disrespect Curtis Blow because he's my elder.
Oh,
y'all know what he did for hip hop. But even as a kid, I was not even the basketball and all that. I just always thought that was like way
pop. That was like the dumbest record in the fucking world.
Oh, shit.
It's only two records that hip-hoppers. Now, I said hip-hopper, not R&B. There's only two records that Curtis Blow made hip-hoppers like. One, Daydreaming. That record is
okay.
The flyest shit in the world. Number
right.
two, how does it go? To the sounds that you hear is good to your ear. Have no fear. Curtis Blow is here. It's to a hip-hop beat.
Right.
And those are the only two records. All that other shit he did, that's disco and R&B.
Yeah, it was definitely pop. It was definitely pop, but like I said, I was a kid, you know, but I felt that then. I was like, you know what I mean? Because I even as
yeah,
a kid, I loved the rugged shit.
Over Curtis
yeah.
for me. He was too, even, you know, like you said, as a kid, you're 8, 9 years old, and it's just like,
Even I was like, nah, I'm going to go over there with Skylar Rock and
yeah, that
you know,
shit was like,
you could tell.
That shit was commercial. That shit was commercial.
Hey, yo, you could tell Curtis Blow was from Queens. You could tell.
Damn.
Oh, wow.
Damn. Okay.
You could tell that motherfucker was from Queens. He didn't. Yo, you, them Queens motherfuckers rhyme funny.
Mr.
Hey,
Jeff, can I ask a question?
Go ahead, go ahead.
Oh, sorry, Kizzo.
Go ahead, Kizzo.
So just moving a little forward, these stories, they're just awesome. It's always good to get that insight. I, for one, I truly love that, and it's great to have this history in the house. Now, when things started to take a turn kind of in hip-hop, what I say by turn is where other locales were starting to get into the game, specifically West Coast. Who first caught your attention? I know Cube came out there to work with a lot of New York producers when he first left NWA, but who really caught your attention and you said they doing it over there? Or was it ever that opinion for you?
Hell no. The first West Coast rapper I ever heard was Ice-T. And that motherfucker was off beat like a motherfucker.
to the New York diaspora. I'm listening.
I mean, I don't disrespect nobody, you know, how they wanna portray their hip hop. How you wanna do it, that's the one of the meanings of hip hop, freedom. You wanna portray your hip hop the way you wanna portray it, go ahead and do your thing. But none of that shit stuck out to me. I didn't, when I was doing my hip hop in 86, I ain't hear no gangster fucking rap over there. None. That's why if it's one thing I stick to in this business, I am the creator of that gangster shit. Because they wasn't doing that shit back in 86. I don't know. Dr. Dre was walking around with the World Class Wrecking Crew with grease in his hair and shit. And these other motherfuckers was doing shit. I don't know. Walking around with Jerry curls and shit. I don't know, you know, standing up people's chairs and shit. I wasn't doing that shit.
So would you, just knowing that opinion, thank you again for taking that. I just always kind of go to the left. So would you take that era where they tried to step in the gate, or would you have more respect for the bling bling that came out with Puffy and Bad Boy and that kind of thing?
I ain't like some niggas either.
Uh-oh.
I figured that.
I told you this. Hey, yo, just because we from the same place, that don't mean we like each other.
Exactly.
Oh,
I ain't like none of them motherfuckers. None of them. And they knew, don't come around me. Don't come around Just Ice. I used to always keep a 40, I used to always keep a 45 or a 38 on me, and I had no problem using it.
Damn. Damn. All
right. Them niggas know. Hey, and just... to this day, motherfuckers still know. Because I'll let a nigga know in a minute, yo, dog, this conversation ain't going to go on too long.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Hey, Just Ice, let me ask you this, because we know you definitely had a long stint in hip-hop and came from the beginning and did your thing. Would you say some of this stuff deterred you from even, like, because you were more so, even though everyone knew you, you were more kept, like even like you said, with the self-destruction. They didn't want you on there. Do you feel in some way you were kept, or did you not, like, was it a time where you just wasn't even feeling that shit, like where I'm good, or you wasn't going
to
bend or break?
Yo, let me tell you something. Every artist, I don't care if it's hip-hop, R&B, gospel, chamber music, whatever, you got to take a break sometime. It's going to happen more than once. I got 13
right.
albums out there, and I did not bang them out one after another. These just came years apart. Sometimes you just got to take a break. You want to just reevaluate the whole motherfucking system. You know? And then sometimes you'd be like, yo, I'm going to take these 6 months off from this record shit. I'm going to concentrate on my family.
Right.
You know? Or I'm going to concentrate on myself. It's like somebody who's a cook. 365 days a year you cook. On that 366 day, you want to take a break for a while.
Right.
You know, so, yeah, I stepped back a few times. That's why, like I said earlier today, Chubb was like, "Just, I didn't even know you were still performing because nobody heard from you." I said, "Yeah,
right."
Because I didn't want nobody to hear from me.
Right.
If I want to hear from somebody, I'll call them. If you call me and I ain't trying to hear you, I won't even answer the phone.
Right, right.
How was your performance at the Hip Hop is 50 in New Jersey? How was that set like? Did you enjoy it? Would you participate in more of those events? Because I hope they just don't stop it at Hip Hop is 50.
Yeah. Well, the person who was the promoter, he's a personal friend of mine. I met him through Charlie Mack in Philadelphia. And he's the one they just bought. My man Rob Schwartz just bought this big ass building on the pier on the Atlantic Boardwalk. And he, like 3 weeks ago, he threw this big party there. A lot of MCs showed up for the 50th. I went up there. I went on right after MC 9. 9 went on there, did his thing. Then I went on there and did my thing. It was kind of cool. It wasn't a packed house because the shit was going on for so long. It was about a good 200 people in there, something like that, but it was enough. And it was like, it was well received for everybody. My man Dinko from the Leaders of the New School was there. He did his thing. Craig G did his thing. It was a few people who did their thing. Matter of fact, remember that group? What's the name of the one that goes? Wiki. Cosmo.
Wiki. Nucleus.
We'll say it again.
Nucleus.
Yeah, Nucleus.
Jam on it.
Yeah, they was there too. Mm. Matter of fact,
Where were they from? Hold up. Where were they originally from? I never really knew.
Brooklyn. They from Brooklyn.
Okay.
They from Brooklyn.
They just had such a different sound. You know, you didn't really know. They just broke out and they were, you know, I didn't, you know what I mean?
Yeah, see, that's the part of Brooklyn that's different. That's over there by
right.
the
Okay, because they were definitely different. You know, that's why I'm saying I didn't know where they were from.
They over there, they came from the area where Todd Terry is from. You know who Todd Terry is, right?
Oh, wow.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. That, stuff like,
that is
but look,
history.
Let me ask you again. But let me ask you this, since you brought Nucleus up, because, again, they're another group that broke out and – they went to what they did again. Some of those sounds were breaking in different places to where even to this day they created a sound like say in the South or different places where those records took off real big and became a, you know what I mean? Like, that's why I even asked
you
I didn't know where they were from.
You know where Nucleus got that sound from, right? You could thank Bambaataa for that.
Bambaataa, yeah, that's what I say. That's what I would cover in my mind.
That's the kind of sound Bam was listening to, and it caught their ear. Because as soon as I heard it, I was like, wow, that sounds – I hear Planet Rock in there.
You could say that Bam sound and Nucleus and all that was really what birthed the bass music, like what they have going on in the South and all that. That's safe to say because those are big records.
Bam sound had nothing to do with bass. It was all drums.
Okay.
It was all drums.
But I'm just saying how that sound transferred and that became like the sound. Like if you hear a lot of those records later, that was like what people took and created those sounds later.
Okay, I agree with you on that. They would take the drum sounds and then build the bass around it.
Right.
That's what they were doing. Especially in Miami.
Even the techno sound that came to California, because, you know, early on in California, in L.A., that was going on, too. It was early that rap was going on when we were coming up with more of the techno sound, and they definitely got that from Bambaataa, too. Could you agree?
Yeah. Yep. That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
Okay.
That's true.
Well, let me ask you this, Ice. What was your... Because like you said, you got so many albums out there. You cover so many years in hip hop of this shit up and down. What was your? Would you say personally for you was your most fun or enjoying that you enjoyed this shit? As far as when you were in it the most, like at what time? Because you had hit records here and there.
The same thing that I enjoy now. I love going overseas.
Okay. I love going overseas because it's different. It's different over there. I was, like I said, I was telling Chubbs today, and I was also talking to my man Bobby Simmons from Stetsasonic the other day because he's booking shows now. I'm like, yo, listen, we always Just Ice and Stetsasonic always wind up linking up overseas every year, at least once a year. We always wind up linking up. And this year we're supposed to be doing a tour over there. And I was like, yo, I really prefer to keep my music overseas. I mean, because to be honest, when I started in 1986, my audience before New York was London. Because before I had, before Put the Record came out, before Put the Record Back On came out, and right before LaToya came out, we, in 1986, we were over there at a place called Express Fest. It was me, Tita Rock, what's this other lady, the girl's name? Nocera, her name was Nocera. And I think Hanson and Davis was coming in and out for certain dates. And we was over there at Wembley Stadium performing. I mean, we had Wembley Stadium packed. This is in 86.
Right.
And right before, yo, no bullshit, I was smoking weed with Mick Jagger.
Wow.
We was back there. We was at Wembley Stadium. It was me, Mick Jagger, and a guy named Ron Resnick. Rest in peace. We was just sitting up there in the window just smoking weed after I did my sound check. We was just sitting up there just chilling, me, Mick Jagger, and I'll never forget that shit. And we did shows over there in 86, and ever since then, I try to go over there at least once a year to Amsterdam or to a place outside of Amsterdam.
That's on my bucket list. Let me ask you this, just not to cut you off, but you spoke on Amsterdam. Was it like that way back then? Did you go over there and
get
that?
It was better.
Okay.
Before they had Euros, they had Deutschmarks.
Okay.
They were called Deutschmarks before Euros. And 25 Deutschmarks is equivalent to $50 American money.
Okay.
And when you back then in the 80s, when you walked through the red light district, yo, the women will come out and tell you to come on inside.
Wow.
It was cool because you knew these women were clean because they had the bill of health, they had the health record, everything right there. It wasn't like any old woman in there. These women were clean. You had to use protection. They wash you up. You know, it was something. It was something.
Wow.
And plus you had the coffee houses over there. The coffee house is where you go in there, and it's every different kind of weed in the world.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you got to experience that shit early.
You pick out whatever weed you want. You sit there. You can even order some coffee or get you some champagne or some Jack Daniels or whatever. They got the reggae music playing, and you sit and you do what you got to do. And that place over there has, to this day, in 2024, I think their crime rate is like 5 or 6%.
Yeah, I heard that.
They
had
a hash house out there, too. I was out there in a hash house. I was in Germany from 86 to 89.
Did you ever go to any of the cannabis clubs? Did you go to the cannabis clubs?
No. I used to just go to Frankfurt, and I hit a lot of the clubs out there, Frankfurt and Hanau, but I never went to
Amsterdam, they have the cannabis cup where – I mean, if you don't smoke weed, don't go in there because you come out high, get some older weed in there.
Wow.
Yeah, I wasn't smoking back then, so yeah. That's probably why I didn't go.
Shit, I was.
Hey, so even being out there experiencing that good weed way back then, did that blow your mind because you come back to the States? This is way before the States was even getting all that. Like,
that's why they call Amsterdam the world's playground. Because there's no other place on the earth like it. When you go to Amsterdam, you go to Amsterdam. When you leave Amsterdam, you ain't going to find no. It's only one place that could come close to the red light district. That's when we was in a place called Rotterdam. And they have the blue light district.
Wow.
But it's nothing like the red light district. Because in the red light district, you know, you have the girls, you have the coffee houses, you have the places to eat. There's always people on there. It's lit up all the time. It's bright. And Rotterdam is dark.
Mm.
It's dark at 5 o'clock. It's fucking dark. And wherever you see a blue light, you know that's where you can go, you know, relax.
Right, right. Wow. Wow. That's crazy.
What's your favorite food memory of traveling through Amsterdam? What's your favorite food memory? What they got to eat?
I didn't like none of the food over there. So they put mayonnaise on every fucking thing. They put mayonnaise on everything.
Wow.
Wow.
They put mayonnaise on everything.
On their pump fries, you would get mayonnaise, but it was good. They call their French fries pump fries.
I didn't like the burgers. I didn't like nothing. I used to go. Fortunately for us, they had us in a hotel where we had our own stove and everything. We could cook our own food.
Mm-hmm.
So as soon as I got there, I bought me some pans and some pots and some plates. I wasn't using nothing that was in the hotel. And I used to go to the supermarket and buy my own food and cook it in the room. That way I knew exactly what the hell I was eating.
Wow.
Hey, Ice, let me ask you this. Speaking on a different subject, how did you feel about being, again, that you come from, you know, you've seen all the different levels of this hip-hop shit. How did you feel? Because I even see you in old pictures with, you know, with a young Jay-Z and all these people. What did you think about these people coming up at that time and what they became to be?
More power to them. More power to them. I don't hate on nobody, man. If you make it in this business, man, more power to you, man.
Right.
Shit, the more money you make, the more prestige you get. Yo, man, more respect you get from me. Because you don't come into this business to fail.
Right.
You know, so everybody who came in this business and they get the multi-million dollar deals and all this, yo, man, enough respect. I ain't hating on nobody, man. That's like saying I don't like today's hip-hop. That's bullshit. I like today's hip-hop. It's progressive. It's progressive. If hip-hop stayed stagnant, it wouldn't go anywhere.
Right.
It wouldn't go anywhere. So enough respect to all of these brothers and sisters out here doing this shit in one form or another, getting money. That's what I'm talking about.
Right.
Get the money.
Right. Okay. Where do you see,
we see where hip hop came from, where it is now, whether you like it or not. What do you think is the future? Because like we even said earlier, maybe stuff needs to be categorized different. What is hip hop and rap? But what do you see as a whole for the future of this hip hop? Because at one point recently, it was the biggest genre. It's taken a back seat now, but. What do you think
of the future? Because you know why I took a backseat, man? Motherfuckers want to be out there killing each other.
Right.
People don't want to associate a million-dollar conglomerate business with murder.
Right.
That's why I took a backseat. Once all that cleared up and now it's coming back up again, all I can say is I just hope nobody gets killed in hip-hop through no bullshit. If you die naturally of like natural causes or whatever, that's different.
Right.
As long as nobody go out there and shoot nobody or stab nobody, hip hop will keep a good name. As soon as that shit happens, that gives certain people the right to talk bad about it and to bring it down. That's what brings it down. It snaps back eventually, but that's what brings it down. If people just keep their head and stop doing stupid shit, and just keep the music going, keep the parties going, leave the fucking guns home. Leave them home.
Right.
Just party. Hip-hop, let it progress. Hip-hop is still young. It ain't even reached its peak yet.
Okay. And let me ask you this, too. Being that you're OG in the game, what do you think about this, what's going on now with all this social media shit? And it's a lot of, this social media thing and this whole new thing is kind of a gift and a curse. But what do you think about all that? Because it's a lot of mess and just a lot of stuff with this social media that overshadows the music, what it's supposed to be, even with artists and
that's
everything.
Stupid. That's another form of stupidity. That's like the epitome of stupidity. That's the epitome of stupidity. Because you're going to go on social media. I don't even fuck with social media like that, man.
I see that.
Nah, I don't fuck with that. I mean, if I look on my phone and I have a message on Instagram, I'll look at the message, and if it's like a legitimate intelligible message, I'll respond like I did with this here for the interview. If it's not
right,
I'll erase it. I don't answer nothing. On Facebook, I don't. Matter of fact, on Facebook, you wouldn't even know it's me because I use a crazy ass name just to see what's going on there.
Right.
Now I don't fuck with. I don't like social media because even in New York City, they use social media to start wars, to start beef.
Yeah.
And I think that's the dumbest. That's the dumbest shit in the world. That's just what you call an immature brain, brain at work. You know.
Yeah.
Maybe when you know they grow up a little bit, they'll snap out that bullshit.
But you got the older cats now on the social media doing this shit now.
Those are the ones that grew up stupid and they still stupid.
Wow.
Those ain't the ones. Those are not regular people. Those are the people who grew up 15 and 16 being dumb with social media. Now they 19 and 20 and 21, maybe, and they still being dumb with social media because their brain hasn't caught up yet. They still think that they kids. They still trying to do this shit with kids. And nowadays, these kids is out here actually threatening lives on social media. Just because.
Yeah. It's bad, man. It's bad right now. You know, I just wanted your take on that.
We're winding it down now. Ladies, Queen Jean, I know we have Queen and Cousin Marcy. Anything you guys want to... else you guys want to speak on or ask Just Ice?
I just wanted to ask you, LaToya. I kind of know how you came up with that. Yeah, LaToya. Tell us how you came up with that.
Oh,
LaToya.
LaToya, I actually wrote that in about an hour. I was on my lunch break. I just got finished eating lunch, so I went downstairs, got me some pen and paper, and I wrote down the whole rhyme because I couldn't figure out a word that rhymed with scoop for you. So I just said, fuck it, LaToya. Because the whole rhyme was already. I just couldn't figure out. The first two bars for me are always the hardest before I write a rhyme. Once I get through the first two bars, the rest is easy. And I couldn't find a word to rhyme with scoop for you, so I just made up LaToya. I really, to this day, I don't know anybody named LaToya.
Damn.
No?
Never did.
It's been that long, you don't know a LaToya.
That's crazy. I didn't know a few LaToya. Wow. Hey,
to this day. Oh, well, I mean, I knew of a girl named LaToya, but we don't know each other anymore. But in my whole life, I've only met one girl named LaToya, one. And it was like I just met her, and that was it. Wasn't nothing. No, it was just, hi, how you doing? About it? That was it.
She wasn't that girl. But being at that song.
She wasn't that girl. She wasn't that LaToya.
She was that girl. Right. But that song obviously took a life of its own, right? So did you get? Mm-hmm. I'm sure you had a lot of questions that people are always asking you, who is LaToya or whatever, because that shit took a life of its own.
To this day, I mean, if people like when I do shows, they'll know who. If I'm at a show, they'll know that's Just Ice because I really don't go around advertising that shit. But they still ask. Who's LaToya? Where'd you meet? I'm like, I never. That's why when I looked at the album cover, this really bugged me out. When I looked at the album cover of Back to the Old School, and they had me arms in arm with some chick named LaToya in a Benetton suit, I'm like, who made this up? I said, there is no LaToya. there is no LaToya. I made it up.
Right. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, this shit. Took a life of his own, though. Go ahead, Queen.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I'm glad that it did because, like I said, I performed a few weeks ago in Jersey for the 50th hip hop, and I didn't do LaToya because I don't like doing LaToya if DMX is not there with me.
Okay.
What I did do, I did Going Way Back, and I did Cold Getting Dumb, and I really didn't have to say much because they sang it for me.
Right. Classics.
Cold Getting Dumb. I see.
Cold Getting Dumb.
I like that.
And then there's a joint that you guys have with a Earth, Wind, and Fire sample that Can't Hide Love. That's a dope.
Yeah.
I love
yeah,
samples.
That's
so that one
on,
right there.
That's on that's what they call the Desolate One.
Yes.
That
yes.
was a very dark, dark album.
Yeah, but that grabbed my attention because I heard that her Earth, Wind, and Fire, You Can't Hide Love sample.
Yeah,
I was
yeah.
like, wow.
They didn't even charge.
So you can tell the people they did not.
They didn't even charge before.
That's
they
dope.
It was going to be a hit. That's why.
Right.
It was like, let them just go out here with that. Is your music
that's
streaming
impressive.
On all digital platforms?
Say that again, please.
Your music, where can it be found at for our listeners?
My music, the new music, because me and Madtronix put a new record out last year. It's called Get Your Drink On, Get Your Freak On, or Get Your Freak On, Get Your Drink On, something like that. It sounds like Cole getting dumb a little bit. So if you want, you can check
yeah.
it out. It's on YouTube, it's on Spotify, Apple, Pandora, it's on all of that. It's on all of them.
That's dope. How do you feel about that new stuff, the streaming stuff, and how the shit is done now? How do you feel about that?
Like I said, it's called progression, man. It's called progression.
Okay. Okay.
I don't have
that's
no,
a good way.
Huh?
That's a good way to look at it because usually when we ask that question, we don't get it. Like it's progression. It's you know the way it is. It's you know like oh no, but yeah, that's what
well,
it is.
Wanna, I mean, it doesn't. I mean, if you know anything about the science of music, music has been here forever. And the only way and reason that it's still here is because it constantly progresses.
Right.
If it doesn't progress, it becomes stagnant.
Right.
Yeah.
You don't want that. You want progression. They always say what comes around goes around. What goes up must come down. That's true. It might come back around, but it's going to come around in the same way, but in a different form and fashion.
Right.
Yeah. Like clothes.
Yep.
Absolutely.
That's a fact.
Well, blessings to your prosperity. And I got a lot of knowledge this evening, so I'm sure other people, the listeners, probably did as well. But blessings to your prosperity.
Thank you.
Yeah, this is incredible, man.
I just got to stop. My battery's getting low.
This was incredible. I want to thank you, Just Ice. You definitely
and
gave us bad
Please
some history,
back.
Brother. This was incredible, man. I learned a lot tonight.
I definitely learned a lot, so thank you.
What's the show called? The G Lou Show, right?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Can you give us a drop? Can you give us a drop right quick? Can you give us a drop for the G Lou Show, please?
Yeah, this is Just Ice hanging on the G Lou Show, man, dropping signs, giving history. Everybody and anybody in hip-hop, keep up the good work. No disrespect, no stupidity. Keep it moving. Peace.
There it is. There it is, right there.
Hi.
Just Ice, the legend. Cousin Marcy, Queen Jean, G-Lou. Ladies, anything you want to end it off with?
I'm gracefully yours.
YouTube. Yep, and this has been a pleasure. Thank you, and come see us again. Wow, history in the building.
Yes.
Yeah, you can.
I'll make sure I drop by.
Yeah,
again.
And type in... Just Ice on YouTube, you all, like Cousin Marcy just said, and follow you. Did some videos there as well. I checked them out today. So, yeah, but blessings to your prosperity, peace unto you and your family, and be safe and stay solid.
Thank you.
And enjoy Florida.
Stay safe.
Enjoy Florida, too, man.
I love Florida, man. I love Florida. You got to get used to the hot weather, though.
That humidity.
Tell me about it.
Stay
away from them
games. There it is, y'all. Just Ice, the legend. It's the
Thank you,
sir. It's the G Lou Show, Queen Jean, Cousin Marcy. Yes, sir. Flashback Friday. We're going to end it like this right here with the classic. Yeah.
All right, party people in the place to be. Here we go on the one they call MC Precise, Just Ice on the mic. The one they call DMX on the beatbox. For your performance, it's a pleasure. Wind it up.
Look,
wind it up. Come on, clap your hands, wind it up. Come on, clap your hands. Keep it out while ball, I tell you like this. A fresh little story, be sure you don't miss. It's our scoop for ya, the truth for ya. I can go on for days about this girl named LaToya. I was walking down the block and to my side next, homeboy DMX. So what the heck, so I saw this fresh girl that I never saw before, but in my heart should be adored and can't board and never ignored. It's a guaranteed love that's highly secured. Daydreaming hard and really getting candid, fantasizing my life for 1 or 2 minutes. And my man DMX just stopped and said,
yo, stop fronting and use your head.
So I went on over to shoot my best shot, thinking of the combination to crack the jackpot. So I said hi, she said goodbye. Leave me alone because I don't have the time. I said it takes a second or something lesser. I don't want to frustrate you with no pressure. How can I act and be polite? I don't want you to turn around and say goodnight. It had to be something I said to make her stop in her tracks, to make her turn her head. When I spoke, she listened with the utmost attention, and at the end of it all, I didn't have to mention nothing really, because it was clear. Now I have the right to call her my dear. Freshly dipped and intricately spoken, but I wanted to leave this young lady heartbroken. Call it vengeance or call it revenge, I'm gonna get her back for what she did to me in the beginning. Now, don't fear me, you just hear me. But what's the matter with you? You look dreary. Look at your stiff like you're frozen, cause while you were choosing, you were being chosen. So don't fret, because I'm willing to bet that no guy can hold you off like this yet. I'm tired, so I'm leaving. Stop pulling on me and please stop screaming. She looked at me with tears in her eyes. She said, is this really goodbye? I said, I'm leaving on the next plane. I don't know when I'll be back again. Kiss me and smile for me. Tell me that you wait for me. Hold me like you never let me go. So now I'm here to do my thing, to grab a mic to rap and sing. To get fresh is a serious must. You can say Mr. Ike or say just give me a rhythm that's supposed to be next, to get fresh on the beatbox DMX. So now I'm here, there's a point I have to prove. Do smooth, real smooth, and make a body groove. To the sound of the X, that's really precise. On the mic, just Ike, that's right. You know what, I won't forget. There won't be no neglecting when LaToya's in my arms. You know she'll be sweating. Deal with precision until the very end, that's right. Talk to her or her girlfriend. If that doesn't get her, I know how to fix her. It's a small thing, I'll talk to her sister. Say it's right or wrong, but who's to judge? I got both of them back, I settle my grudge. I can see both of them at any place, and they feel so stupid cause I laugh all in their face. A total disgrace that ought to be chased. Goddamn, what a shameful waste. So young lady, just rock the place, and all yuck mouth better use toothpaste.
LaToya, LaToya.
Alright, y'all, that's the way you done by the one they call MC Precise. Just Ice on the mic, nervous. And the man DMX for your 4 minutes of pleasure. And to my man, Mad Chronic Screw, and the man, Zeb, Zero Rock, Lord, Chuck, Chill Out, Magic, Molly, Mar, Red Alert.
LaToya.